Well, in reference to our call last hour, some people have sent me some Fastpass saying that if a person has a pentagram etched on their body, on their hand, chances are they are a werewolf. Now, I'm not sure the caller was a werewolf, but it is pretty fascinating, isn't it? Creatures. Jonathan Downs joins us next. He's a cryptozoologist on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan Downs spent much of his childhood in Hong Kong, surrounded by age-old Chinese superstitions and a dazzling diverse range of exotic wildlife. He soon came infected with the twin passions for exotic zoology and the paranormal. He began writing professionally in the late 80s and has written 17-plus books now. In 1992, he founded the Center for Fortean Zoology in the aim of coordinating research into mystery animals, bizarre and strange animal behavior, and his own particular love of zooform phenomena, paranormal entities, which apparently only appear to be animals. He has searched for lake monsters at Loch Ness, pursued sea serpents and birdmen in Cornwall, chased big cats across West Country moorland, and in 1998, went to Latin America in search of the grotesque chupacabra. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Jonathan, welcome back.
Good evening, George. How are you?
God, it's been a couple of years. It goes by too fast, Jonathan.
3 years now, mate. 3 years.
At least, yeah. My gosh. It just clicks. How have you been?
Oh, it's been a lot. It's been a very strange 3 years, and an awful lot's happened. We've done... Oh, Lord, half a dozen expeditions. We've moved house. When we last spoke to you, we were based in this little house in the middle of a suburban housing estate in a city called Exeter. Whereas now, my father died just over a year ago, and I inherited the old family home. So I've now got this So the Center for Fortean Zoology is now in this lovely old big house out in the country, and it's... Most of the house is over 200 years old. Some of it's 100 or 200 years older than that. And it's haunted. And we've got big stone floors and big oak beams. It's a very strange place. It's lovely to be out here. And we're building a museum at the moment. So a lot of stuff's happened.
Well, good for you. You know, this subject matter continues, I think, to perplex and amaze. We've had a couple of cases in this country over the past year of possible chupacabras. Very strange wolf animal-like creatures that have no hair, bluish-gray in color. They are found dead, but nobody really can figure out what they are. They speculate, of course, that they could be hybrids between a wolf and a dog or something, but strange creatures everywhere. We're going to talk about many with you tonight, Jonathan, many indeed. But, you know, I just had a story on where a caller last hour before you came on has a pentagram on his hand. It's right there in the palm of his hand. And some people are telling me that it's the sign of someone being a werewolf. In your work as a cryptozoologist, do you investigate the myths and mysteries of some of these creatures, like a werewolf or, you know, like a vampire? Or do you primarily try to investigate real animals, like Earth type animals?
No, we do both. In fact, my organization and I, we actually work with the British police forces. And so we've actually worked with the British police to investigate animal mutilation cases. And I've been called in on a couple of very strange cases where animals at least have been completely drained of blood. So no, the whole vampire thing and the shape-shifting werebeast thing, something that interests me a lot.
All right, we'll talk about all of them tonight, and we'll do a little review on some of the work that you were doing 3 years ago when you were on the program as well. The issues that are out there today, Sasquatch, Loch Ness Monster, the Abominable Snowman, which could be a Sasquatch, Chupacabra. Do you ever also get reports of dragons or dinosaurs on this planet?
Dragons, yeah. I mean, the thing is with dinosaurs is a lot of people love to believe that there are still dinosaurs on the planet. But I'm afraid, apart from birds, we all know that birds are actually the descendants of dinosaurs. But But apart from birds, all the other dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. Almost certainly was a result of a meteor hitting the Earth. But there are reports of dragon-like creatures from all over the world to the very day. And last summer, for example, a team from the Center for Fortean Zoology went to the West African country of the Gambia looking into modern-day sightings of a creature which the locals call Ninkilanka, which is supposed to be a giant snake with a crest on its head that has magical powers.
How big?
Well, some of the locals talk about it being anything up to 60 or 70 feet long.
Oh, my gosh.
But then again, you've got to remember as well, they've imbued it with amazing sort of magical powers that it can kill by just looking at you. However, sometimes under special circumstances, they'll come out of the river and do magic for you and stuff. But if you scratch away the surface from the legends, I think there's a very real body of evidence that in recent historic times, there was a damn great big snake, maybe 20, 30 foot rather than 50 or 60 foot, that lived in that part of Africa. And the stories now seem to be coming from further up the Gambia River. So there might well still be such a creature in places like Guinea or Mali, in the less explored parts of West Africa, more inland, so it's probably now extinct in the Gambia.
Jonathan, what size animal could this dragon-like serpent or snake swallow if it's 60 or 70 feet long?
God knows. I really did. To be quite honest, that's a question I can't answer, because as you know, some of the biggest animals on this planet eat some of the smallest food.
Yeah.
And the largest mammal that has ever existed on this planet is the blue whale. And the blue whale can be over 100 feet long. I think the biggest one ever found was 109 feet long. And it eats little squid-like creatures called krill, which are only a couple of inches long. So I don't know. I would assume that an animal, but I would assume if it is like all the other snakes on the planet, it would probably eat something the size of small to medium-sized deer or antelope, small to medium-sized wild boar people.
Do you get reports of creatures like Mothman, reports that we have here in the United States out there?
Yes, I mean, Mothman is it's a bit like dragons. Every country on Earth, every human population on Earth, from the Inuit Eskimos right down to the native Australians, they all have stories of dragons, and they all have stories of Mothman as well. So in North America, you've got Mothman. In Britain, you've got Owlman, which I've actually written a book about. We can talk about that later, if you like.
Sure.
In West Africa, you've got a creature called Sasabonsam, which is the same type of winged humanoid entity with red glowing eyes. In East Africa, you've got something called Popobwa, which is supposed to be like a monkey or an ape with bat-like wings and red glowing eyes. You've got the Tengu of Japan. You know, these things are found all over the world.
Why are these creatures kind of hidden away? I mean, a few people see them, in this case here, in this country, several people report seeing Bigfoot or Sasquatch walking across a road or down in a ravine, but they're not widespread. Why is that? Because we're not talking about a lot of these creatures?
Well, we're actually talking about three totally different types of creatures. Firstly, you've got the cryptids, the bona fide unknown animal species, which are still awaiting discovery. And the reason they're awaiting discovery nearly always is because they're rare, they're elusive, they're shy, and quite often they're quite intelligent, so they're quite good at hiding from mankind. The second lot of these things you've got is the pseudo-cryptids. They are known species of animal that are in the wrong place or at the wrong time. Things we know they exist, but it's like in, you know, all the way across North and South America, you have got, at least until the Europeans arrived, you had cougars or mountain lions. But now you have sightings of them all across Europe, where there's never been any. But they've escaped from captivity, and now they've established themselves into the wilds here. And so they are unknown animals, although we know what they are. We don't know how they're fitting into the environment or where they came from. Then the third lot you've got are the zooform phenomena. They're the weird things. They're the things like Mothman or Owlman or the weird Bigfoot-type creatures people see come getting out of UFOs, the ones that seem to appear and disappear at will, and the devil dogs and the chupacabra, and all these really weird, strange creatures that really don't seem to be ordinary animals as we understand them. They appear to be something far more esoteric and weird.
Where would you put the Thunderbirds, these massive birds, under these three categories?
George, it's one of the things that makes you such a good radio interviewer is that you have a habit of asking very difficult questions. Now, the Thunderbirds are like so many of these creatures. They seem to fit into more than one of the categories. It's like Bigfoot in many ways. Bigfoot, you know, you get some reports of Bigfoot which appear to just be a flesh and blood creature, a new species of giant ape. But then again, you get other ones. Like I said just now, you know, they have reports of getting in and out of UFOs or appearing and disappearing at will. They seem to be much more sort of apparition-like. And it's the same with the Thunderbirds. Some of the Thunderbird reports, especially the ones from Illinois and Indiana, do appear to be giant birds. But some of the ones which are from the southern states, particularly southern Texas, do seem to be much weirder. They're the ones that seem to have some sort of paranormal...
Yes.
Paranormal powers, some sort of weird... They seem to just have this weird, quite unsettling side to them. And we've actually just published a book about Thunderbirds. This is somebody you ought to have on your show sometimes. A guy called Ken Girard, who's a researcher from Texas. He's just done a book for us called Big Bird. And he's fantastic. He's spent quite a lot of the last few years traveling around the southern Texas border areas, talking to the people who were involved in the big Thunderbird, Big Bird flap of 1976-77. And you know, he's somebody I think you ought to think about having on sometimes, a damn good researcher.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will do that again. And he's in Texas, you say?
Texas. I can email you contact details. It's a good bloke. There's also another guy I know. I think he's in Illinois, because and this is actually all your fault, in fact. You know, I was on your show 3 years ago.
Right.
Well, I made friends after your show with a girl called Jessica. Hi, Jessica, if you're listening.
She
was listening to your show last time I was on. And she invited me to go over and visit her in Marshall, Illinois. And I went over there, and while I was there, I had a long telephone conversation with an author from Illinois called Scott Maruna. And he's been researching the Big Bird reports from Illinois that appear to be real flesh and blood animals. And he's got some incredibly interesting data. So he's somebody else I recommend to you. He's a good bloke. I've never actually met him, but he's a really, really interesting chap.
Okay, definitely. Get us the information, the contact information, and we'll jump right on it.
I recommend Scott as well. He wrote a book about the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, which you may have heard of. That's quite
yes.
An interesting story. And he wrote the sort of definitive book on that. Nice guy.
You have just covered some incredible things in your life. Of all your investigations, and we're going to talk about many of them tonight, Jonathan, mm-hmm. Is there one investigation that stands out from the others, one investigation that keeps you baffled and perplexed?
My favorite investigation of all time is Puerto Rico. As you actually said in your incredibly generous introduction, I did an expedition to Puerto Rico looking for the Chupacabra in 1998. But I actually went back in July 2004, and I'm planning to go back again next year. And the story of the Chupacabra, it's an incredibly complex one. And I've uncovered something which I think might explain some of this.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Can we share some of that?
Yes, of course you can. I think some people are going to be disappointed, But other people, I think, are going to be incredibly intrigued.
Well, yeah, some people are disappointed because we, I guess, most of us like to clutch on to the weird. We always want to hope that there's something so much strange and bizarre about something. And then it might be right under our nose, and I guess we get frustrated with that.
Well, actually, I'm hoping, because we're talking to a huge audience tonight. And the thing is, usually, because I'm based in England, England is a relatively small country. But the United States is such an enormous country. There's going to be an awful lot of people listening. And are we taking callers tonight?
Yes, we will. In our last hour, our final hour of three, we'll take phone calls.
Well, if there's anybody listening out there who's in Puerto Rico or who has lived any length of time in Puerto Rico, I'd be really interested in your comments on this.
And we do reach Puerto Rico, so we will see if anybody from there calls you with this.
Well, hello, Canalvanas. If there's any of you there, especially if any of you are farmers on the big grass fields just above the city, have a listen to this, because I'd be really interested for you to call in later.
What is it about the chupacabra that got you fascinated and interested?
Because it doesn't make sense. On the face of it, the story makes no sense at all. Because I'm a scientist, and although I do believe in the paranormal, I believe in the paranormal grudgingly, and I do my best to explain everything within accepted scientific frames of reference as well as I can before I finally say, nah, we've gone off into exiles territory. And at least on the face of it, the chupacabra doesn't make sense. But the thing which I've discovered over the years, is that the chupacabra is not one thing, not just one single thing. And perhaps that's something you can say about an awful lot of unknown animals. For example, 100 years ago, sailors and fishermen across the world believed an animal called the great sea serpent.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the mid-1950s that a Belgian professor called Dr. Bernard Heuvelmans, God rest his soul, he died a few years ago, and I had the honor to know him as a remarkable man. He wrote a book called In the Wake of the Sea Serpents, in which he claimed that there wasn't one creature called a sea serpent. There were at least eight different unknown large creatures in the sea that sailors and fishermen and submarine crews saw very, very briefly, and they all assumed it was one creature, but it wasn't. It was actually eight different creatures. And that's something I'm discovering with the chupacabra. It's not just one phenomenon. It's a collection of actually completely disparate phenomena.
And, of course, chupacabra means what, bloodsucker?
Goatsucker.
Goatsucker, yeah.
Now, this is something that's interesting as well, that if you read quite a lot of the newspaper articles that are written about the subject, it's claiming that the chupacabra, the name the goatsucker, is a very, very old one. But from what I can gather, the name chupacabra was coined by a friend of mine, a guy called Ishmael Aguayo, who is the head of the civil defense teams in Canóvanas.
Huh.
It was coined in about 1993 or 1994 by him and a mate of his to try to give a name to whatever it was that was attacking the goats and the domestic livestock on Puerto Rico. So it is a very new phenomenon. And an awful lot of different things have been reported, which all seem to have got lumped together, if you follow me.
All right.
And I've discovered at least one of them seems to be a very, very exciting new species of animal.
Okay, let's talk about that when we come back, Jonathan. Jonathan's websites, he's got several of them, all linked up now at coasttocoastam.com. Later on, too, we'll talk about one of his books called Owlman. That's fascinating, too. So stick with us. I'm George Norrie. And this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, take advantage and get the After Dark newsletter and also get the two old shows, Art Bell Interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin, as our gift when you subscribe and renew also your After Dark newsletter. Just call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back with Jonathan Downs, our guest. Jonathan, back to the Chupacabra. I guess what was fascinating is there's no question, and even though you're going to tell us about this new creature, possibly, the fact that people were witnessing something over all these years, I guess you have to assume something's happening, right? They're not making it up. They're not seeing this.
Oh, of course. There are far too many reports to ignore them. I mean, there are some unknown animals which are only known from one or two very obscure references, but the chupacabra has been encountered by so many thousands of people. There's obviously something going on. Now, the thing I find particularly interesting is that the it's a well-known image of the chupacabra, the semi-bipedal creature with the spine that's on its back, was first reported from the town of Canovanas in Puerto Rico in 1994. But that image then very quickly spread across the world. And whereas the first sighting, like I said, were in 1994 in Puerto Rico, within the next two or three years, similar creatures were being reported from all the way across Latin America, from as far south as Argentina, to all over the Spanish-speaking parts of the States as well. I mean, there have been sightings as far north as, far north as northern Arizona and northern Texas. And to me, it was obvious that one flesh-and-blood creature couldn't sort of come out of nowhere and spread all across such a large geographic area. So I started off my researches actually in Puerto Rico itself back in 1998, and I interviewed a lot of different people who had either seen this creature or who had had attacks on domestic livestock. But it wasn't until I went back 3 years ago that the whole thing began to start making sense. Now, I was in Canovanas, and on my first trip, I had made friends with Ishmael Aguayo, who I was talking about, who is a fantastic researcher, wonderful guy. And when I went back last time, I met up with him again. But it turned out that the killings, at least there in the Canovanas, the pure killings that had been described as being by the chupacabra, had fizzled out. It stopped in the late 90s. But the sightings of the spiky-backed creature continued. Now, for the first time while I was there, I actually saw some very close-up photographs of the killings, and people had told me before about attacks on goats in Canovanas, and I had assumed that, just like in England anyway, that goats were quite large creatures.
No, they're not. They're little.
They're not. The ones in Puerto Rico are tiny. They are really, really small creatures. The goats in England are the same size as a sheep. They're the size of a large dog. The goats that I saw in Canovanas, including the goats of two farmers that actually had attacks on their flocks, were really, really small.
They're like lambs almost, aren't they?
Yeah, they're tiny little things. And then one of the farmers who'd had a series of attacks on his livestock showed me some photographs. And they'd always told me, you know, there's been either puncture marks in the neck or there's been a triangular hole in the skull, where the brains had been eaten. And when they showed me these photographs, I finally realized what had done the killings. I'm not saying what had done every killing all the way across South America, bits of North America and the Caribbean, but what had done those particular killings in Canovanas. Because I've investigated animals all over the world, and there's no doubt about it. These diagnostic triangular holes in the skull with the brains being eaten are done by an animal called a mongoose.
The mongoose, of course, we've heard about. So mongoose is what, I think, in India, in Pakistan, they used to use to attack cobras, right?
Yep, and they were introduced into Puerto Rico and various other islands of the Caribbean, and then in about 1880, 1900, in order to keep down rats.
Okay.
Now,
go ahead.
That doesn't explain the sighting of the weird spiky-backed creature.
Right.
Now, one of the things But, you know, it does explain some of the killings. It doesn't explain the weird. It doesn't explain the weird stuff.
Let's get into the weird in a moment. But with the mongoose, how does it make that triangular shape, and why does it go for the brains?
It just likes to eat them. In the same way as I like to eat chocolate, the mongoose likes to eat the brains.
All right.
But then I discovered, because while I was there, I discovered there'd been an explosion in the rat population in about 1990, and all small carnivores, their populations expand depending on how much food there is for them. So I'm just hypothesizing that there was an expansion in the mongoose population in the early 90s. When they wiped out, when they'd eaten most of the rats, they then turned to domestic livestock. But it doesn't explain the spiky creature, and it also doesn't explain the fact that the spiky creature is still being seen today. Then I was up in one of the hill farms, and I was talking to a pair of banana farmers, because as I'm sure you know, in Puerto Rico, bananas and plantains are one of the biggest and most important cash crops. And this farmer was telling me that it was really strange, although he'd had attacks on his livestock back in 1997, 1998, he hadn't had any attacks since, but something had been attacking his banana trees. Now, when I was a little boy in Hong Kong, I remember a friend of my late father's was the chief of police in Hong Kong, and we used to go and visit him, oh, I don't know, three or four times a year. And he was a keen gardener, and he had banana trees in his garden. And I remember one day, oh, this was in about 1967, 68, 40 years ago, he was furiously angry because something had destroyed his banana trees. And he set out traps for it, and nothing had come. And then back in those days, because he was the chief of police, he could do all sorts of things he probably shouldn't have done. And he set two policemen out with rifles to guard his last banana tree, and they shot a porcupine. Now, in North America, the porcupines have fairly short spines, and they live in trees. But in the old world, in Africa and Asia, porcupines are larger. They have much longer spikes on their backs, not on their sides, and they live on the ground. And some of them will walk half upright. Now, there's a heck of a big change between, there's a hell of a gap, evolutionary gap between the North American porcupines, the old world porcupines, and the new world porcupines. But it turns out there's one animal that was only known from one skeleton, one subfossil skeleton. It was probably about 2,000 years old. It's only known from one specimen. It looked like and appeared to be exactly the same as one of the old world porcupines. And it was found in a cave in Puerto Rico in the 1920s. And nobody knows what it actually looked like, but its skeleton, or the bits of the skeleton they found, was similar enough to one of the old world porcupines used to walk on their hind legs to make me think, I wonder if there's a type of very, 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 very strange porcupine that is the same as the ones you get in the old world, but somehow turned up in the new world.
With maybe a different kind of spiny back.
With another sort of spiny back. Now, the thing that makes this sound interesting is that up until very recently, everybody thought that in Puerto Rico, like most of the Caribbean, was an island that broke off the main continent of South America millions of years ago and just drifted out into the Caribbean. But there's some evidence that it's actually not the case. It's something called a microcontinent. And it actually, just like South America and North America, it broke off from North Africa X million years ago and drifted independently across the Atlantic. So I'm just wondering if there's any possibility that it's a relation to some of the porcupines you still find in West Africa now.
That's a good observation. Creature, no doubt, but a strange one that just probably hasn't been identified yet.
Well, and also the thing that is interesting to me is the word chupacabra, which was first coined by my mate Ishmael in a bar in Puerto Rico 12 years ago, the name's now spread all the way across the Spanish-speaking New World, and is now a catch-all term for all sorts of strange animals and paranormal creatures. And it's become sort of like a bogeyman. It's become a catch-all term for all sorts of strange phenomena. So the whole thing is, to me, even more exciting than just a one single paranormal phenomenon, because it's a whole group of different things of widely different answers.
Let's move over to Sumatra, where you have checked into the search of some kind of huge upright walking ape.
Yes, the team from the Center for Fortean Zoology has done two separate trips there. We did one in 2003, which I believe my colleague Richard Freeman talked about on your show last time.
Yes.
But then, last time we spoke to you, it was March 2004, and in June 2004, we went back again. And this is one of the things that is particularly interesting. This is something I'm very proud of, is that our team made contact with a nomadic tribe called the Kubu people, that's K-U-B-U. And these people are so obscure, very little is known about them. They were completely nomadic until about 30 years ago. They didn't eat, and it's only now that the Indonesian government has built villages that they spend some of the time in, but they still spend most of their time wandering through the jungle. They're so primitive, they haven't got the wheel. They didn't even invent the bow and arrow. They had to actually be given the bow and arrow by other neighboring tribes. And these people have a lot of stories to tell about the chupacabra, and my team met up with them and spent some time with them.
It is amazing what's out there, Jonathan. It truly is. This I want to talk with you about Loch Ness and other lake monsters as well, and
yeah,
we'll get into the Owlman, of course. But in this country, let's spend a little time here to talk about Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Is it the same creature as the Yetis would call the abominable snowman?
Possibly. Now, this is something that, again, Bigfoot's, again, become a catch-all term for what I think are two separate animals. Now, again, I've done a little bit of research into Bigfoot. Back in the end of 2003, just before I was on your show last time, I spent some time with a guy called Chester Moore Jr. Now, he's another guy you ought to have on your show. He's a fantastic guy. He's a researcher in Texas, who's done a lot of work into Bigfoot-type reports in swamps of Orange County in Texas. And I've been out in those swamps with him, and they are the most impenetrable places that I have ever been. And they are more impenetrable than the tropical rainforests. Now, I'm English, and all I knew about Texas was watching old cowboy films. I'd never been there. And I thought Texas was going to be a big, flat area of land with the occasional buffalo and the occasional oil well. You know, cause all I knew, it was some old John Wayne movies. And I had no idea there was such thick, dense swampland. And some of the work that he's been doing down there, I think is absolutely fascinating. And he's got some pictures that he's taken with thermal imaging camera.
Thermal imaging, yeah.
And, sorry, you've got to forgive me, it's early in the morning here. I'm still in bed drinking a cup of coffee.
That's okay. So you've only got two more hours to go here.
No problem. I love being on your show. Just forgive me if I fluff my words a bit.
No, you're doing
great. But thermal imaging cameras, and he's got some pictures from there which do appear to show human-sized somethings in the swamps. And I would hazard a bet. I'd make a bet that if anybody is going to get the definitive evidence for Bigfoot, it'll be Chester or one of his team, and it will be from those Texas swamps. It's because they are containable. It's not going to be from one of the big things in the Pacific Northwest, because the Pacific Northwest is so big, so difficult to traverse, that the only way you're going to get Bigfoot then is if somebody in a truck hits one by mistake.
Yes, or shoots one, and I hope he doesn't.
I don't think he's going to shoot one, because I think they're too shy, they're too intelligent, and too elusive. I think it's purely going to be roadkill, it'll be an accident if it happens in Washington State or Oregon or Northern California.
Sure. Some people believe it's Gigantus Piscicus, is it?
Yeah.
That's a huge ape. Yeah.
There's a big problem with that, which I don't... This is... Gigantopithecus is the best possible argument for the Yeti. Now, the Yeti Central Asia is, I have absolutely no doubt it exists, because up until very recently there was, as you say, an animal called Gigantopithecus, which was basically a giant upright walking relative of the orangutans. And it lived, it's known from subfossil deposits, where in the same subfossil deposits you find the remains of leopards, clouded leopards, snow leopards, giant pandas, the Chinese water monitor, the Asian black bear, the langur, and hundreds of other animals which are still alive today. You're not talking a situation like the big KT extinction event which killed the dinosaurs. There's absolutely no reason whatsoever for the giant Gigantopithecus to have become extinct. It wasn't hunted by people, there was no population pressure, there was no apparently food pressure on it. There's no reason for it to have become extinct. And I reckon that they are still there, there's no reason for them to have gone away, and they're still living alongside the same animals that were found in the caves alongside them 30,000 years ago. The problem is, in the whole of the New World, in North America, there are no fossils of any primates apart from man. Mankind seems to be the only primate ever to exist in North America. It's been suggested that when man crossed the land bridge from Siberia to Alaska and populated North America, that Gigantopithecus came too. But the question is, why? Man colonizes because of the way the social group of the human race works, that basically when young men get to puberty, get to teenagerhood, they leave home, they branch out, and they take some of the women from the tribe with them. So human tribes have always colonized and explored new areas. That's what the human race does. We don't know how Gigantopithecus behaved, and it's very difficult. The big question is, if Gigantopithecus did travel north, travel across the Siberian Alaskan land bridge and then colonize North America, you've got to ask the question, why?
So true. Again, there's no question people are seeing a creature or a series of creatures, like you've said, and it's out there.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's out there. It's families there. There are little ones running around somewhere. They're there.
Now, that's what interests me particularly. That's why I'm not sure about the Gigantopithecus explanation. I'd love to be proved wrong, but I don't think it's Gigantopithecus in North America. What I'm wondering if the North American one, if Gigantopithecus is a yeti in Central Asia, is just a huge unknown ape. But I think the ones in North America are more intelligent. And I'm wondering if they are very, very, very primitive people. If they are genus Homo, if they are related to us. I'm not saying they're Homo sapiens. I'm not saying they're the same species as us. But I am wondering if they are very, very primitive hominids.
Let's go to Loch Ness in Scotland when we come back with Jonathan Downs.